You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Welcome to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt, your podcast for all things mental fitness. And today it is a special day. It is our 100th episode. And with me, as semi-usual, is my wife, Libby Grace. Hello, Libby.
Hi, Jimmy Hunt. Congratulations.
First question. Did you think I'd actually get to 100 when I first started this?
I'm not sure if I ever thought about that, but I'm kind of surprised at how quickly you've got to 100. So,
considering I had all that time off as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it seemed, when you said that you're about to record the 100th episode, I was like, what? How many of these have we done? It feels like kind of yesterday we started.
Because I'm not usually known for my consistency.
No, so, I mean, that's, yeah, in that respect, it is, the stickability has been impressive.
Yeah, I missed a few here and there, but in general, it's been pretty good. And so today, I would like to go over my 10 lessons from 100 episodes.
Perfect.
Kind of makes it sound like 90 episodes had no lessons in them, now that I think about it. But I don't have time to recap all 100 episodes. If you want to go listen to them, go listen to them. But these are just 10 points, 10 lessons, 10 things that I have sort of pulled out just by looking through the episodes that we have done that I think are worth talking about again.
Yeah.
Just in small little amounts.
Perfect.
Just to make points. Number one, the quality of your relationships equals the quality of your life. End of story. Do you agree, Libby Grace?
I agree in every way.
This is the interesting thing. When we first decided to do the podcast, it was just after I had met this person at this big company, and they had said to me, do you know why people use our EAP service, which is the free counseling service that is required by big companies in New Zealand? I said, no. She said, take a guess. I said, depression, anxiety, stress, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no. And she said, outside relationships. That is the number one reason that people are going to use this counseling service.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was like, holy moly, I am missing a huge beat here in regards to the service that I provide in regards to mental health and mental fitness. And that's why every third episode of this podcast has been a relationships episode. But I cannot overestimate just how important it is to create, nurture, and just love on the relationships that you have in your life.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a good example of that, Libby. And we were talking about this with a friend the other day. It's like the quality of the relationships that I create with everything from perfect strangers to my friends really pays off for me.
It does. Yeah, you've kind of, a friend commented how she was sort of amazed at how easily you can just walk up to random strangers and spark up a conversation with them, but it not just be a conversation, you end up being friends with them. And in this particular instance, we got invited to a party that night, or a dinner that night.
A very high-end, catered mansion party.
Yeah, very fancy. We were not, you know, we weren't on the guest list originally. Not our normal kind of event. And suddenly we're, you know, after you've spoken to this guy for, I don't know, less than 15 minutes, we're on the list. We're at a beautiful dinner on the beach. It was pretty special. And yeah,
and he's my new best mate.
And best so, mate. A friend commented how easy it is for you to do that. And it's true. You're the quality. You bring quality to conversations because you refuse to have superficial conversations. And so the relationship can only be built on depth from the get-go when somebody speaks to you. If they are not interested in having an in-depth conversation, they would quickly just probably end it and you'd never see them again.
Yeah.
So it kind of filters out people that you wouldn't want to have a relationship anyway, just by being you, being very deep and very thought provocative in the very first 15 minutes of conversation.
Yeah. So the formula from Dr. Aaron, the 36 questions to love guy,
yeah,
is love comes from connection,
mm-hmm.
and connection comes from shared vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And shared vulnerability comes from somebody willing to take the first step to sharing something mildly intimate. Now, you can't just trauma dump on the people and be super open and vulnerable right off the bat.
Mm.
But if you grow that level of shared vulnerability, the depth of connection increases and therefore the depth of love increases. And that's one of the fundamental ways in order to increase the quality of a relationship. I talk about that in the 36 Questions to Love podcast mm-hmm. and a bunch of others that we've done.
Yeah, that's a theme that's resonated through a lot of our episodes. I remember talking about this through various episodes about how that really is the basis of creating and establishing good, solid relationship and then maintaining it. Is the important part as well.
Yeah, you got to turn up for it.
Mm.
You can't just start it off really good and then neglect it.
Yeah.
It's like a plant. You've got to water it. You've got to make sure it gets the right amount of sun, right nutrients and all that sort of stuff. And it will bear fruit further down the track, which is always fantastic. Which moves us on to number two, that relationships are the sum of two individual parts.
Mm.
They are not an entity unto themselves. So if you improve the parts of the relationship, then you are inevitably going to improve the relationship.
For sure.
I talked about this in the last episode with Ivy. I've talked about it in a bunch of different things, but it is almost the key to all of our relationship episodes. They're not about, hey, what can we do as a couple to be better?
Mm.
They're basically, what can we do as individuals to either understand the other person better, communicate with them better, be a better version of ourselves, to therefore be a better partner, and ultimately end up with a higher quality intimate relationship.
Yeah, I think that's really important to recognize and reflect on, because that's been our default, that we're working on ourselves, and as a result of that, the relationship blooms and grows and changes and evolves. We could have been looking at it as, oh, how do we make our relationship better? And I don't think we would have approached it the same way had we been focused on an end goal, because by focusing on our own individual growth and development, the relationship has twisted and turned its way to where it is now. But if we'd have focused on we want this relationship to get to X point, we might have missed those twists and turns and we might have got to that point, but it might not have been as fulfilling as it has been by just developing ourselves and working on ourselves. So we've got to a place in our relationship, which I think is phenomenal right now. It's really gone through the ringer a few times, and it has also taken some beautiful meandering wanders through some, you know, wonderful areas of life. And where we've got to, I don't think we would have necessarily chosen as a destination, because we didn't know it could be possible. So I think that that view of working on ourselves and as a result of that, the relationship will better, has been the right choice.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that really, I guess, sort of sums up the difference in everything from like historical therapy, which was come in and we'll work on your relationship, to the sort of more modern take of we're individuals that are currently choosing to reside inside an intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me, this wasn't on my top 10 lessons, but the slides in here, which is I do not own you, and you do not owe me anything, right? You are your own sovereign human being, and like, I can't tell you what to do. Like, I can't even tell you, you know, not to go sleep with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you not to go take a job in England. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you any of those things, because if you feel like that is the best thing for you, then who am I to stop you, even as you're the closest person to you?
Yeah.
I don't own you and I can't stop you if that's where your heart desires. Now, in the reality of an intimate relationship, we're obviously going to discuss big things like that.
Of course.
But the person hearing those things still has to sit in that place and go, you're not mine to control.
Mm.
And it's that whole, like, it's that whole being told what you can't do just makes you want to do it more.
Yeah, for sure.
It's that childlike behavior in all of us.
Yeah, rebelling against authority.
Yeah, like just don't tell me what to do. But we all do it, right? And we all do it, like at least we all did it as kids.
Yeah.
Like the more mum says, you know, stay inside, the you're more not- you want to just go run around the neighborhood.
So you're not the boss of me.
Yeah, exactly. And the more you say, you know, don't look at other women, the more you want to look at other women.
Imagine if I had to say that, I would just be like, I'd lose my voice. Absolute waste of time.
Yeah. Especially when I spend half my week sitting at a beach exactly. being paraded by
bikini-clad women.
Bikini-clad woman. It would be hard, Libby. You're right. Number three. The only way to improve yourself is to go inward.
100%.
The thing that just popped into my mind then is, I had a discussion on the beach the other day with a person around the difference between what you want to achieve and who you want to become.
Mm-hmm.
And that what you want to achieve is a very external thing.
Yeah.
I want a new car, I want a new house, I want to achieve this job, I want to have kids by 35, I want to blah, 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 blah. They're all very external things. And even if we do manage to achieve these external things, when we get there, we realize we're not actually the person we want to be.
Mm.
Just because magically we did those things. Whereas if we figure out who we want to become, and then we work on becoming that person, then ultimately it usually doesn't matter what we end up achieving because yeah, we've become the person we want to. We're happy yeah. and we are satisfied. But becoming the person you want to become ultimately comes down to being able to sit quietly with yourself and observe your thoughts.
Right.
To go inwards, to be able to create self-awareness and insights and epiphanies that are then allow you to choose your behaviors as responses instead of reactions. And using my framework in my last book, make constant conscious choices.
Yeah.
Then we are creating a life rather than receiving a life.
I like to phrase it as driving the car rather than being the passenger. Like
yeah.
I've been really working on that. Particularly this year, last year was a write-off for me for so many reasons. And I know we've all been through a lot post-pandemic and everything. COVID has really, you know, put a spanner in the works for a lot of people. So everyone's had a really rough few years on the surface. And I felt very much like life was happening to me. And it felt like it wasn't going the way I wanted it to go because I had no choice in it, so I thought. But it took one tiny moment of inspiration, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, where I just decided, actually, you know what? I no longer want to be in the passenger seat. I want to drive. I'm in charge. I'm in control of what happens to me. I'm in control of how I feel. And taking that ownership and that responsibility for that really was quite humbling because I realized how many excuses I was making for my life not being so great. I was able to outwardly blame other people, situations, things that were happening to me. Oh, it's not my fault. I'm the victim here. And people would, you know, sympathize with me and be like, yeah, you're right. You actually are going through a rough time. And it's true. I was going through a rough time, but it would never have changed had I not decided that I'm going to take the wheel. I'm going to be the one driving the way my life looks, the things that I choose to do, the way I feel. And it has really been a huge eye-opener for me, and it has meant I've put my life on a track that I'm very happy with now, and the crappy things that were going on just don't seem to be happening anymore.
Yeah, and what you essentially did was move from a victim mentality into an empowered creating mentality.
100%. It's a really good way of putting it. And it's just something that sounds easy to do when someone's like, oh, you just decide to do it. But in all honesty, it was just that easy. And any time a thought or a feeling that would come up for me that reminded me of that victimhood, I would just say no. And my key was to say, I'm going to dissolve that. A friend of ours gave me that phrase, which really helped. I could actually watch the feeling just dissolve and disintegrate in front of me. And I was going around dissolving bad juju all day for a while. It was like, oh, this is actually fun. Here's a bad thought or a negative feeling. I'm just going to watch it dissolve in front of me. And it was kind of, that was empowering, just realizing that I have the ability to do that should I choose it, and making those constant conscious choices to do that and to make sure I was in charge of everything.
Yeah. And that's it. If you want growth, if you want change, the only way to improve yourself is to go inward and deal with those thoughts, feelings, behaviors that are creating your life and change them.
Mm.
And there are a lot of podcast episodes that we've done on that.
I wanted to say as well, you mentioned about the just that theory or belief about, or not a belief, sorry, the statement of who I want to become rather than what I want to achieve.
Yeah.
That's something that you introduce early in your coaching and mentoring with people. And it's such an effective reframe of, these are my goals. And we've just had New Year. Some of us have probably set New Year's resolutions. Probably a lot of those are things you want to achieve.
Mm.
I know I have. One of the things I want to achieve is to travel back to New Zealand for next Christmas, New Year, and be able to go also to Australia with a friend. That's a goal. That's an achievement I want. So I have to, you know, save the money for that, blah, blah, blah. And that is okay. But what I haven't spent time doing, and I'm going to, is who do I want to be? Who do I want to become in the next year? And I suspect with the ideas I already have floating in my head of who I want to become, being able to go to New Zealand and Australia in a year's time will just be a spin-off of becoming that person.
Yeah, well, so you can work backwards from that, right? So if you do end up with some sort of materialistic goal, you can then start asking yourself what sort of person achieves that goal.
Exactly.
Right? So for your one, you're going to have to be more diligent.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to be, you're going to have to work a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of person that turns up consistently.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to be a person that, you know, thinks a little differently because we've got to figure out ways for you to make that money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all, and so then there are ways to become that person.
Yeah.
And when you become that person, the symptom, the side effect is, oh,
look at me,
shit,
I get to go.
I've got enough money to go back to New Zealand.
Yeah. So it's a nice little reframe from what are the things I want to have to who is it that I want to become? And in my mind, that person has those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like that one.
Yeah. Or you can just cheat and ask everyone on the podcast, hey, does anyone want to help me pay for me to get back to New Zealand?
I haven't been to New Zealand. I haven't been out of Mexico in 4 years. I went to Mexico City twice in the last, I think, 2 years. I've sat in my little town, tiny little town for that long, and I was so homesick this year for Christmas. Like it was the first time I've actually felt like, okay, I've got to do everything I can to get back for the next one.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So number 4, connection is the cure.
Mm.
Take an ad break here to say my latest talk is called Connection is the Cure. And it went down really, really, really well.
Yeah.
When I gave it for the first time recently, and even had people crying, which doesn't happen in all my talks.
Well, that's
wasn't a bad cry.
No.
It was a revelatory cry.
Yeah.
It's a cry of understanding, and oh, this is what I'm missing, and so you mourn for what you've missed, but then you have the awareness to be able to now go and generate
and
that.
The hope you go, you fill those people with, oh, I can, I've just realized, oh shit, I'm in that category of, oh, I'm down here, or this is where I am. And you allow people to see that, okay, even if you're here, this is the path forward. And I think that's hugely emotional for people. A little bit awkward in front of your colleagues to be cry. But the beautiful thing that you do bring to your presentations and your talks is it is a space of, if it's an emotional experience, it's an emotional experience, and everyone feels safe and comfortable to be, you know, vulnerable. So
yeah. So if you need an awesome keynote this year, one of my keynotes this year is called Connection is the Cure. And it really delves into the three parts of connection: connection with the self, which we just talked about; connection with the land, which is hugely important for many reasons; and connection with others, and how to better connect with others, which goes back to the first one. Connecting with others is connection ultimately relationships. Connection. Very, very key. Number five. We mentioned this very briefly just before, but one of the biggest lessons from all of these podcasts is changing your reactions into responses. And so just to clarify what that is for people, in your brain, you have neurons going down neural pathways. You have a thing called the default mode network. It's basically your default to make life as easy as possible for you. It makes reactions. So when you drive a car, for example, if you had to make every single decision, it would be massively taxing. Just like if you remember back to when you learned to drive a car, it was tiring, it was hard, you had to think so much, and now you just automatically do it. So you end up with these subconscious reactions. And we have those for simple things, but we also have them for really big stimulus like trauma or stress. What we want is to have as many responses as we do reactions, right? Because a response is going to get a better result for you than a reaction is. When I was meditating one day, I got given a quote in my head. Who knows where it came from? It was given to me and it said, the distance between thoughts or stimulus and action is wisdom. So like if someone says he's going to go talk to the Dalai Lama, he sits there and he's blah, 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 blah. He's got all these problems. He dumps them in the Dalai Lama. And then the Dalai Lama goes, so here's my answer, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas when we get things, we're like, here's the question, here's the answer. And it's just boom. There's no time in between. And so we are reacting to things rather than responding to them. And, you know, our reactions don't take into account the circumstances, the context, all of the things. They usually knee jerk. Someone insults you, you punch them. Like if you've had a traumatic upbringing.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, whoa, now does that reaction get a good result? No, not usually. Might end up in jail, might fucking kill the guy, might just end up in a fist fight and have a black eye. Not good results. I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but a couple of weeks ago, there was a guy that walked past me when I had my sign on the beach. And my sign says, chat with me. And he said, no one wants to fucking chat with you.
Yeah.
And kept walking. And I was thinking back and I was like, you know, 15 years ago, there would have been an altercation.
Yeah.
Like I would have at least sworn at him. And if he'd come back at me, then I would have stood up and I would have gone over to him and there would have been a thing.
Yeah.
Because when someone insults you like that, my first reaction is to go straight back at them.
To defend yourself.
Yeah. And I sat there and he said that to me and I just smiled to myself. I was like, man, how much pain must that man be in order to be lashing out at some random dude on a beach?
Yeah, and you'd never even spoken to him.
No.
You just saw
his sign. No eye contact even, because he was walking away when I turned around.
Yeah.
And I just looked at him and sent him love because the man obviously needs it.
And that's true. So true about reactions is that they are often trauma-informed. So you react on a level that is subconscious because of how you were raised, because of situations that have passed in your life, there is absolutely no thought behind a reaction. That's the whole, that's all of it. And yes, we've had to react in certain situations when we've been under threat. Historically, back in the caveman days, sure. But because we don't live in those, in that fight, flight, freeze from it on a daily perspective anymore, we should be taking more time to respond rather than react. Because our, like I said, if it comes from a place of trauma, it's not coming from a helpful place. Any kind of reaction you have that is not based on taking a pause and thinking about it, or even just having time, 2-3 beats pass, it's going to potentially be inflammatory or make the situation worse.
Yeah, and you know, what you were saying there is so true, because we cannot respond out of the sympathetic nervous system state.
Mm.
We can only react.
Mm.
So that's your fight, flight, freeze, fawn state,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't respond out of that because your body has gone into a reaction state
mm-hmm.
by definition. A bunch of our podcasts, like especially the ones I did with Nigel, the ones I've done breath work with Nigel, with Will, with a bunch of people, cold plunges with Nigel. The second most popular podcast episode is the grounding episode
mm-hmm.
with Nigel, which is all about staying or and learning to move into your parasympathetic state, which is the key to allowing you to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And so whilst it's all well and good to say, hey, look, you should respond instead of react, that is impossible to do in theory based off that knowledge.
Yeah.
You have to put into practice tools and frameworks and understandings that allow you to stay in the parasympathetic state or get there very quickly after a stimulus has come and put you into the sympathetic state.
Yeah, from an evolutionary standpoint, we've never been taught how to get out of reactive stress situations.
No, because they were always short.
Yeah,
and then when we got out of them, we just relaxed.
We calmed down again. Exactly. Yeah. You had the adrenaline, and then you had that big lull afterwards. You're like, oh, okay, rest and relax and recover now that I'm safe. But as children, we're not taught how to calm our emotions and how to take those few moments in between the stimulus and the response. And I think that's a really important thing to teach our young people and ourselves, is to feel a bit more calm. Because one thing I know from experience is when you take a pause and when you calm and you sit and you listen, stuff drops in. It's almost like magically, like a word will drop in or a feeling will drop in. And it's like, that's the gift that the universe is giving you to say, this is how to handle this situation. And it's kind of, like you said, it's the wisdom, but it's allowing that to fall in for you is the pause.
Yeah, that's that space between thought stimulus and then action. And it just comes from learning to regulate your nervous system.
And the easiest thing, you say it all the time, the easiest thing is just keep your mouth shut. And by keeping your mouth shut, you have to breathe in through your nose, which calms you down, which allows you to take a beat.
Shut your mouth.
And that's huge. It's such a basic tip. But in so many situations, it's extremely powerful.
Yeah. Number six, expect nothing and appreciate everything. Follow your highest joy and expect nothing in return. Appreciate everything that comes your way. Gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the most simple, most fundamental rules that you could ever do to cultivate happiness in your life. Because most of us expect everything and appreciate fuck all.
Yeah.
Which is just a simple recipe for disaster, right? Even if you go to a party, like that party we went to the other night, so nice, that guy invited us, very fancy, catering, mansion, DJ, all the things. And my first thought was like, this is going to be a really cool party. And I was like, yeah, we'll go. And then later on, I was like, it doesn't matter what this party is. Like, this party's just a party.
Yeah.
So we went to the party and it wasn't as good as my first
expectation. Yeah.
But because I had tempered my expectation to, hey, it's just a party with some people.
Yeah, you enjoyed it.
It was more than I expected.
Right.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Right? So I changed that. I was like, oh, so it's like, yeah, this is cool. Like, I expect nothing.
Yeah.
And I was so appreciative of having free drinks, free food, having new people to meet,
mm-hmm.
you know, being in this lovely environment. I appreciated it all so much to be grateful for.
Yeah.
That evening. Even the bonfire that didn't work. Massive pyromaniac, if you don't already know, love a big bonfire, and they had wet driftwood, and it just wouldn't light. And so instead of being disappointed that the expected bonfire didn't work, I was just appreciative for the funniness of people trying to light the bonfire.
Yeah.
Right? I was appreciative of us just being around and having the big sparklers we had, right?
Yeah,
just,
it was fun.
It is. Like I said at the start, just a simple primary life lesson. If you can expect nothing and appreciate everything, there will be very little wrong with your life.
Mm-hmm.
Very little. Number seven. Lesson number seven from the 100 episodes is, unsurprisingly, that we as people would like to raise better children.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I get it constantly at the end of all my talks and questions with people. We all want to we love our kids and we want them to be better. It's why our number one listened to episode was my interview with Nathan Wallace, the child rearing expert. Like, people are voracious for that information, but we've got it backwards. I'll tell a story. You know the story, baby. You know all my stories. But I was talking to 400 kindy mums, and I was telling them about my favorite quote in the entire world. You cannot overestimate the unimportance of practically everything. Practically everything is unimportant. The rugby score, the car you drive, your husband, your wife, practically unimportant in the grand scheme of things. And as I finished that, I got the only heckle I've ever had in my entire career, where a woman yells from the back, "But that's selfish. My kids are more important than me." And I said, the definition of selfish is to put yourself first to the detriment of others. And I don't ask people to do that. I ask them to put themselves first for the betterment of others. Because when you put yourself first, when you move yourself up the mental fitness continuum, when you improve your mental fitness, you improve you turn your reactions into responses, you have better connections, all of these things, guess what, lady? You're going to be a better parent. The classically overused analogies of put your own oxygen mask on first before assisting others, you can't fill from an empty cup, they're all correct. If we want to have better children, we need to be better people.
Mm.
End of story. Neither Libby nor I are parents. Mm, but
if we don't count the kiddies.
We don't count the kiddies at all.
Oh, damn.
But, and I was mentoring this woman yesterday and we were talking about her daughter. I was like, hey, look, and don't listen to me about parenting advice, but here it is. And she's like, that's all spot on. Because, yes, we're not parents, and a lot of people may not think we're qualified to speak on it, but it's just some universal truths. The better you are, the better capable you are to teach your children tips, tricks, understandings, perspectives that you have learned to be better. You know, the amount of people like, my child's anxious, and I don't know what to do about it. And I go, what do you do for your anxiety?
Mm.
And they're like, I don't really know. Who's supposed to teach your child?
Yeah.
You. And if you don't teach them, then the internet will. TikTok will.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Right?
Yeah.
So you better start learning some tools in order to regulate your nervous system, to observe your thoughts, to turn reactions into responses, to connect better with other humans. Like, you better learn these things right now so that you can impart this knowledge onto your children.
I think as well, this just reminds me of a conversation I had at the weekend with a friend who's, she's in her late 20s and she has a little brother who's 7. And the parents are a little worried that he's not very social, that he doesn't have many friends. And even at school, the kids are not really very social. And what his elder sister reminded me of was that they were locked away for during lockdown. During COVID, they didn't have an interaction with their peers. And so they were in the house all day, literally in the house all day.
Yeah.
And this has happened all around the world. And so this...
So that was from when he was 3 till 7.
Yeah. Right? So this is, you know...
Pivotal times.
Exactly. And so this is something that I don't know if we've seen the repercussions of yet or we're starting to see them, but that's a pivotal time in children's lives, and that having that impact them so severely, and the stress and anxiety that went on in the adults in the house during that time is imparted on the children. And so I think that it's a hugely valid point to make that it's more important than ever that we're raising, that we're looking after the mental health and helping develop our young ones in a way where they can see modeled behavior that is, you know, okay, it's fine to be anxious. That's a normal part of being a human, but here's how we deal with it. And actually role modeling that out loud and not hiding it away and not being like, oh, you know, mum's got to, like back in the 50s, mum's taking Xanax or whatever to get through the day, and nothing's ever talked about, everything's swept under the rug. It's more important than ever that we are real about how we're feeling and that we have tools that we can teach each other, and especially the next generation.
But in that particular example, they're saying he's not very social. They are not very social.
Well, they weren't.
The parents.
Yeah.
No, they haven't been.
No, exactly.
At all.
Exactly.
She was saying that one of her New Year's resolutions is to be more social.
Exactly right.
So it's no wonder if you haven't been social for the last few years, your 7-year-old son has not learned that.
Exactly.
Right? So they've been very insular at the moment. And this is the thing, like, you are obviously going to rub off on your children. You are the primary influence on your children, and you have to be very, very, very conscious of that.
Mm.
And what better way to raise them if you want them to be happy, well-adjusted people is, well, here's the thing. I don't think I have met a happy, well-adjusted person with fucked up parents.
No.
Right?
Right.
Naturally.
Yeah.
You know, maybe someone who's then gone, and so then I did 20 years worth of work.
Yeah,
I'm happy and well adjusted. Yeah. Like, cool. Like, if the parents are messed up, the kids end up messed up.
Yeah.
That's the simplest formula.
Yeah.
Good parents can raise good kids. You want to be a good parent? Do all of the things before I just said. The 6 lessons before this one.
Yeah.
All right. Number 8. Personal boundaries are key to a healthy life. I did a episode on personal boundaries, and that episode came off the back of a girl that I coach in tennis really needing to learn about it. And then I gave her this whole couple of hour thing on it, and I was like, man, I should just put this into a workbook and write it for everybody else. I gave it out to a woman on the beach yesterday. I sent her the link to it. It's been downloaded a lot of times from my website because it's free. And if you want it, then just go to jimmyhunt.com/free resources. And the whole process of identifying your personal boundaries, implementing your personal boundaries, and then negotiating your personal boundaries is a fundamental skill that we have never learned, we don't understand, and if we don't put it into place, then people walk all over us.
Mm-hmm.
I told you about this woman the other day at the beach who I gave you the rough overview of what was happening to her, and you're like, her friend
is a dick.
Is a dick. Her friend, and this person can't see it.
No.
Like, and this is what I ended up having to explain to her, that she is being massively massively taking advantage of.
Her friend is abusing her.
Pretty much.
Psychologically. It's horrific what she's doing to her.
Exactly. And yet they're best friends.
It's so sad.
And this woman just simply does, and this is a 53-year-old woman, does not understand personal boundaries.
Yeah.
And because the example I gave to her and then you later on was that if a woman came up to me at the beach and said, "Hey, Jimmy, I'm going to give you a back rub." I'm going to go, "Yes, please." And then she's going to give me a back rub. And I am never going to tell her to stop.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
And so 2 hours in, she's cramping up in her hands and groaning. I'm still sitting there taking the back massage.
Yeah.
Right? Because as long as she is willing to give, I am willing to take.
Yeah.
And that is so true for so many instances and so many places with so many people.
Yeah.
If you keep offering, they will just keep taking.
Yeah. As you were telling me that, because this woman's situation is, you know, extreme and nothing like what I've experienced. But as you were telling me it, it was like, oh, that's what I would do. People pleasers, especially. Yeah. We will just keep on being martyrs and we'll keep on doing extra and over and above. And even if you're exhausted, and it reminds me of your mum on Christmas Day doing all of the cooking and all of the everything for the family, who just kind of turns up, eats, and then is like, yeah, cool. And your mum's just working and working and working. You know, and that's a stereotypical family that happens all over the place, where there's one person who's like giving and giving and giving until they're absolutely dead on their feet. And everyone else is unaware of the fact that
fault is she didn't set boundaries.
Because she's never set a boundary. She's never said, hey, you know what? I'm not doing this. Somebody has to come and help me.
Yeah.
And it becomes a pattern and it becomes more and more difficult to escape that.
Absolutely.
But as soon as she would say, or I remember a couple of times when I was newly in your family, I would say, hey, I'll come and help you. And I'd say to somebody, hey, do you want to come and help me do the dish or something else, and just bring someone in? And they're like, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, because people are just ambivalent.
Exactly.
And they're just doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And if food keeps turning up, then I'm just going to keep eating the food.
Day.
Oh, this is wonderful.
And
they don't understand what's going on in that person's head unless that person says so.
Yeah. And it's sometimes very difficult, and it's definitely highlighted in your resource about setting boundaries. It was something that actually helped me at the time as well, because I've been terrible historically at setting boundaries.
You said, it's the people pleaser energy.
Exactly. And coming from a trauma background, it is very difficult to feel like you are worthy of setting a boundary and that you are allowed to set a boundary. It is very, very uncomfortable for some people. So it's an important, massively
skill.
Important skill to learn.
Yeah.
Hugely, hugely beneficial, very scary and very daunting. But I think your resource is a very, very good first step for people who might recognize something in what we're saying about themselves, like, oh, I do that, or I'm an overgiver and I really feel exhausted by it and I need to learn to set boundaries. Or if you're constantly having things that just feel yucky, that somebody speaks to you in a certain way or acts in a certain way towards you and you've never stood up for yourself, so a life-changing thing for you would be to learn to set your boundaries and really like stand within them and learn how to not let anybody, you know, tell you that you don't deserve your boundary or that you're not worthy of them.
Number 9, going together is better than going alone. This is one of my lessons for me, as always, which, like, and I've again discussed this in podcasts many times, but I'm a lone wolf. And for my entire life, I have gone alone. And it's fine by me. There's an old African proverb which says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I love it because I want to go fast.
Yeah.
I go fast everywhere and I do everything fast. But you can't go far going fast and going alone.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the African proverb is like, you know, if you need a message relayed over to the next village, you know, you don't send 100 people together to go do it. You send one dude on foot, run, my friend, run. And he runs over and then, well, he got there very fast. if you need to move villages, then you're going to need to go together.
Mm.
You're going to need to help each other. You're going to need to bring supplies. You're going to each need to have your own little particular part to play in the whole. And then you can go as far as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And cultures have done that historically. The nomad cultures have gone long distances because they've gone together. And this parallels in our lives because Western culture has moved us towards such an individualized culture that we are alone, that we do have to go by ourselves. It takes a village to raise a child has disappeared. And even take children out of this, like it takes a village to succeed and anything has disappeared, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've just expected, we're sold these stories of lone entrepreneurs coming up with good ideas and becoming super successful. But the truth is going together is better. It's more fun. You got someone to talk to and you're more likely to go further. And I have we did that men's circle podcast a couple of podcasts ago. There's a guy in that we're going to do a venture together this year. And don't look at me like that. I already told you about it.
Okay.
Me and Brady with the community.
Oh, all right.
So, you know,
I thought you said adventure. You said venture.
I said venture.
Oh, I heard adventure. Oh, right.
You were just scared I was
going to
disappear for another
Jesus,
few
I just had a little panic attack.
Yeah, a venture, not an adventure.
Okay.
My adventure will be coming later.
Ugh.
I told Libby my new adventure the other day and she...
No, it's not going down well.
It's not going down well because it'll take me away for a couple of months going on a big adventure. So just sit here earning my brownie points best I can, saving them up to be able to go on the big adventure, which I'll talk about in the future. But yeah, going together is important. Like join forces with people.
Mm.
Start a men's circle or a women's circle. Join a mentoring group. Like join a club. Just find people that are going in the same direction as you and help each other get there.
I think it was really what you said at the beginning highlights that the proverb doesn't necessarily mean that going together is the better option. There's a time and a place for everything.
Yeah.
And so in the context of, like you said, getting an urgent thing out to the next village, great, fast.
Run, my friend, run.
But in the context of success over the course of your life, which is not a race, then the going together really does become the crucial factor. And that building, like you said, relationships, community, that is really what's going to get us through. And, you know, so being more social, having more adventures. Those are the fruits of life that make things so much more rewarding. You can go fast in your life. You can absolutely just power through this until the day you die because, you know, that's coming. So it's up to you how blessed and how fulfilled you want your life to be. And I think that that's the important part of that is the more time you spend nurturing and cultivating relationships, the more fulfilled you'll feel at the end of your life.
Lesson number 10, last lesson for the 100th podcast of Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. Lesson number 10 is consistency is key to anything.
Mm-hmm.
To anything. The word that I use most consistently when helping people grow is the word practice. Everything is a practice. If you want to get better reactions and turn them into responses, practice.
Yeah.
If you would like to stay in your parasympathetic nervous system more than your sympathetic, practice. If you would like to have better relationships, practice. If you would like to connect with the land, practice. Other people, practice. Yourself, practice. I sort of came up with a metaphor last night when I was talking to this woman and it was that of a guitar, right? So you say you want to learn the guitar? Cool, here's a guitar. You've made the decision. You want to learn it. So you hold the guitar. And then in 6 months' time, I come back and you're still holding the guitar. I haven't learned anything. It's because you're just holding the guitar. Like at some point, you have to actually try plucking the strings. You have to learn what to do. And if you just had done it for 5 minutes a day for the 6 months, like you'd probably play me a decent song at the end of 6 months. She was an example of just the most classic example of pretty much all people of having a piece of awareness, making a choice, and then not making it the constant.
Yeah.
Sorry, constant conscious choices. Yeah. So she made a conscious choice, but then didn't make that constantly or consistently over time that allowed her to then learn that particular skill. There is no way in any conceivable universe that I can just give you a guitar and you can just play me a song.
Yeah.
Like you just, it's impossible. And yet if I told you that with a guitar, you'd do exactly what you did and go, yeah of course.
Yeah.
Like you just hand someone a musical instrument, you go, I can't just play that, yeah. Right? And yet when I say, I would like you to change your reactions into responses, for example, you're like, yeah, no, I'm going to do that now. Like you can just suddenly play the guitar.
Yeah.
And you can't. Changing reactions into responses is as difficult as playing the guitar. And people think playing the guitar is very difficult.
Yeah.
But it's not if you did 5 minutes a day for 6 months.
Yeah. I think you also, one thing I like to highlight when you talk about practice and getting better at something is give yourself the grace to get it wrong. Give yourself the grace to go, 5 minutes is actually enough. You don't have to dive straight because this is what happens. And especially, I mean, I fall into this trap all the time. I'm going to go and do this thing and I jump 100% into it and I expend all my energy. And then I'm kind of like, oh, I'm either bored or I'm exhausted from it. And so it takes me a long time to go back and do it again. But if I'm mindful of, okay, 5 minutes is enough. I don't have to be perfect at it straight away. I need to take my time on it. Give myself the grace to say it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to learn. Learning is a process. Then that's how you become successful at practice. But beating yourself up or thinking you have to be perfect within a week or whatever it is, that is where you will stop practicing because you know, for all the reasons, because you feel bad about yourself, you're embarrassed you haven't got it yet, you're whatever, you've got these high expectations of yourself that you haven't fulfilled. So hugely important is give yourself time and give yourself grace to learn as a practice.
It's called the aggregation of marginal gains. It's compound interest. It's growth on top of the previous growth. That's what practice is. And that aggregation of marginal gains, I've said it before, I'll say it again, stole the math from James Clear. If you're 1% better every day for a year, at the end of the year, you're 37.8 times better. 37.8 times in a year. And let's say you're not so good at it and you only do 1% every 2 days. Then you're going to be 6 times better at the end of the year. 6 times is a hell of a lot of times.
Mm.
Imagine what Manchester United would pay me if I told them I could make them 6 times better at the end of the year.
Mm.
Right? It's worth so much money. And it's worth so much to us as humans if we can improve 1 time, 2 times, 3 times. So it's just compound interest. And to get the compound interest, you have to keep putting money in the bank.
Yeah.
You have to keep turning up consistently over time. And if you do that, you can change pretty much anything in your entire life. Small little wins compounding over time. Those are the 10 lessons from 100 episodes. Hope you enjoyed them. I like them. I think they're pretty good lessons. If you have enjoyed this podcast, if you've enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it. feel free to quote it, feel free to review it. I don't even know if I have any reviews, never even looked. If you reviewed it, that would be nice. But I expect nothing from you. And I appreciate absolutely everything. And I love hearing from you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
And we'll see you all next week.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.